Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. I go for my refuge to the Buddha. I go for my refuge to the Dharma. I go for my refuge to the Sangha. The formula of the threefold refuge is familiar to all Buddhists, both ancient and modern. Daily it is repeated in diverse tongues and in many different lands. But like so many other religious formulas with which we are acquainted, I'd almost said over-acquainted, it is to be feared that the votaries and devotees who so ardently repeat it have no very clear idea in their minds of what it is to which they go for refuge. All seem to know who the Buddha was and what the wonderful law which he preached and the order of monks he founded. But few, if asked, would be able to say in what sense they go for refuge to these three precious jewels. Few would be able to state explicitly, and with any degree of certainty, what is the precise relationship which they seek to establish with these three holy things. In what sense may it be said that we go for refuge to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha from the troubles of this wretched world? Who indeed is the Buddha? What is the Dharma which he preached? And where is the Sangha to be found? Buddha. The Buddha means one who is awakened or wise, one who has surpassed the physical senses and the mind which guides them, or which they guide, one who is completely established in a state of superconscious perception. The word indicates a relation between a human being and a state to which he has attained, a relation between a person and a principle. It is used to express that complete and harmonious integration of the phenomenal and the noumenal, which comes with the realization of the divine. The Buddha of Buddhism, the Christ of Christianity, the Prophet of Islam, the avatars of Hinduism, and any other realized persons are all so many bridges thrown over from the seen to the unseen, like rainbows linking heaven and earth. They are as rafts to bear us over the terrible and turbulent waters of samsara, infested with the sharks of birth and death, to the further shore which is called nirvana, wherein are peace and immortality. When logic fails us and philosophy is slipping underneath our feet, when all our most cherished convictions tumble about us like a house of cards, when it seems that at last we are losing our hold upon reality and are tossed from doubt to profounder doubt and from despair to still wilder despair, when the God of our youth forsakes us with all the theologies and the abyss is open to receive us, containing we know not what, when all our days are passed in misery and anguish of spirit, and we ask why indeed we should live, or why we should not cease to live, then indeed, when our eyes are purified with tears, we obtain a glimpse of the holy lotus feet of those immortal souls who conquered and overcame all their horrors for the world long before ever we were born. Then it is that we are given an opportunity to change our mortal sorrow for immortal joy, our madness into sanity, our ignorance into true knowledge, to go from darkness into light, from death to immortality. When we see indisputably before our eyes men and women whose lives are as a light to lighten the Gentiles and them that sit in the shadow of death, then gradually, as we come to know them better and better, we gain faith in those things unseen, of which they are the living witnesses in that divinity to which they have heart and soul surrendered themselves. And by degrees we come to believe, albeit unwillingly, in the reality of their experiences, and ultimately in the possibility of the highest experience of all, which is union with God. We are carried by an inexorable logic from a limited perfection to an unlimited one, from Shramana to Arhat, from Arhat to Bodhisattva, and from Bodhisattva to Buddha. Thus do we take refuge in the Enlightened One. It is no blind faith that we place in him. We believe that he attained to a state to which, consciously or unconsciously, the whole creation is tending. For all things strive after happiness, and this state is supreme happiness. In Pali, Nibbanam Paranam Sukham. We believe not only that he, the Buddha, the awakened one, has attained to that state, but that we also, if we carefully follow his instructions, can attain to it also in the end, and be one with him. Dharma. Sorrow and the cessation of sorrow. This is the teaching of all the Buddhas. They are never concerned, if they are concerned at all, with metaphysical conundrums for their own sakes, but only insofar as they are conducive to enlightenment. The Buddhas proclaim a message which snaps asunder all the fetters of greed, hatred, and delusion. They teach men how to establish themselves in that state of ineffable repose, which it is beyond the power of words to express or mind to conceive. Our belief in the efficacy of their teaching is based ultimately upon our belief in the reality of their attainment. Consequently, we take refuge in the Buddha before we take refuge in his law. Refuge in the Buddha is the first step, refuge in his law the second. And we take refuge in the law of the Buddha by practicing it. Faith without works is dead. Sangha. The third step is to take refuge in the Sangha. The Sangha means literally a congregation. But a congregation of what? In the terminology of Buddhism, it means a congregation of bhikkhus. It can also mean, for instance, a convocation of poets. But what is a bhikkhu? A bhikkhu is the living embodiment of the Buddha Dharma. He is one who is firmly established in the Noble Eightfold Path. In all his doings, he should adhere to the 227 precepts which are laid down to guide him from samsara to nirvana. To take refuge in the Sangha should be the ultimate aim of all those who, having taken refuge in the Buddha, have been able to take refuge in his Dharma also. To take refuge in the Sangha means to become a bhikkhu. But the yellow robe does not make a bhikkhu. He is a bhikkhu who has succeeded in putting into practice the precepts of the Enlightened One. There may be bhikkhus in shop, office, factory and home, all unknown to us. We may meet them in our daily walks and yet not recognize them. For the light shined in the darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. To take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma and the Sangha means that we become first of all convinced of the supersensuous existence of an eternal spiritual reality, either by association with some living holy person or by reading of such a life in some book or scripture, that we endeavour to realise that reality which he has realised before us by practising certain of the disciplines which he suggests to us. And that finally, by means of such continued practice, we become firmly established, if not in that transcendental state, at least in the road which ultimately leads to it. It has been said that the Buddha is simultaneously person and principle, as indeed all saviours are. We must learn to distinguish the eternal of principle from the temporal of person. The principle is beyond all relativity. It is only its human expression which is limited. He is truly a Buddhist who endeavours to attain to that formless state, which is the nirvana of the Buddhists, the kingdom of heaven of the Christians, the Brahma of the Vedanta, the Tao of Lao Tse, and the Bhagavan of the Sri Vaishnavites. Not he who adheres to a gilded image of Shakyamuni. The Mahayanists have a doctrine of Trikaya. There is the Dharmakaya Buddha, or the Absolute, the Sambhogakaya Buddha, or Father in Heaven, Saguna Brahman, Allah, etc., and the Nirmanakaya Buddha, the Buddha of transformation or incarnation, or avatar of divinity. The historical Shakyamuni is a member of the third class only, and as such is common to Buddhism alone. But that Dharmakaya to which he attains is common to the whole world and to every religion. And he who aspires to reach it is the true Buddhist, whatever he may nominally be. He alone is the true refuge taker, the true treader of the middle way. Note, this article was published in The Middle Way, November-December 1945. It was probably written during that year either in Ceylon or in India, where Dennis Lingwood spent some of the summer months, or possibly in Singapore, where he arrived in the autumn.